Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Two Footed Tackle Podcast. I'm your host, Aris Dimitakos, back again for another week, speaking about all things football. I hope everyone is well, as always. I am splendid. Splendid is a word. I've just come back from Perth, WA. I landed, how long ago? It's currently 6:16 at the time of recording. I landed about 4 or 5 hours ago. Come home, had a nice sleep, because planes just get you tired for some reason, and that was not a very enjoyable plane journey, I'll tell you that. For like 4 hours, and it's still in the same country. Bizarre. But no, it was a well enjoyed weekend, I guess you could call that, watching the WWE, which is great. And we stayed there for a couple of days, of course, and then flown over, had some rest, and then back into this, back doing what I love, which is always good. Hope everyone is well, though, as always. I hope everyone has enjoyed the weekend of sporting action. There was a lot of sport. A lot of sport generally. F1 testing was back. Obviously, WWE happened. There was UFC card. The football is back. The Australian football is back. There's a lot of sport going on right now. So if you like sport like me, you're loving life at the moment, which is always good. I also did some shopping in my trip to Perth. Shout out to the kit dealer and the first store. I want to say that's what the shop is called. The first store, yes, or just first store. Two shops in Perth, one of which I got this lovely St. Pauli kit from. I got some other fantastic football pieces of football apparel, which you'll be seeing on this podcast across the coming weeks. You'll be sure. So if you see some funky kits, some weird kits, just know it's from the kit dealer and first store. Two lovely shops in Perth. If you are in Perth and you like retro football kits, go and visit them, because they're brilliant. They're brilliant. They're really good. But yeah, let's just crack on, shall we? Before we start, of course, I implore you all to subscribe to the Two Foot Attack Podcast on TikTok. First, subscribe on YouTube. That's the most important thing. Subscribe on YouTube and then follow on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter. Make sure you go to all the audio platforms and support those as well. Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcast, and Apple Podcast. 5-star rating, like it, follow it, all that good stuff. Shout it around, it would mean more than the world. And then, of course, what else? You can follow me on my socials, at @Ari_Y_Stammer on Twitter, @Arismatakos on TikTok and Instagram. There you go. Let's start things. And I think, look, transparency, you could probably tell from the start of this episode, I'm very tired, extremely tired, but I'm committed to the Tuesday, 5 p.m. every week. So this might be look, it's going to be a lot of League Cup final chat. I think you guys can probably imagine just based on what happened. A lot of League Cup final chat. I want to speak about victory as well, and we'll of course touch on some other things that have happened. Of course, we won't leave anything kind of too out there. But yeah, it'll be a heavily kind of my team orientated episode this week, I would say, which some people may like, because it's going to be me ranting about my teams for about 35-40 minutes, which is always good. And then some people don't like that, so unfortunately it is what it is at this stage, unfortunately. Okay, let's kick things off and let's go with the League Cup final, shall we? Liverpool win the League Cup final 1-0. Liverpool win the League Cup final 1-0. Virgil van Dijk goal in the 117th minutes of extra time. Got it for the team from Merseyside. It was a weird game. It was the third time. It was the fourth time Chelsea and Liverpool have faced in a cup final in 4.5 years. Dating back, of course, to the Super Cup final in 2021. Super Cup final in 2021, and then, of course, two domestic cup finals in 2022. Two domestic cup finals in 2022. And then, of course, the final that happened on the weekend. I watched this in Perth Casino. which was an interesting experience. A lot of red. And speaking of red, I did get horrendously sunburned, but we don't talk about that. A lot of red. And it was a pretty weird kind of place to go to watch a game, because very aggressive, very partisan, which was great. Not great when you're supporting the other team, but you appreciate the atmosphere when you get it, right? And the game happens, game kicks off, Liverpool have a very undermanned team. I've seen Darwin Nunez, no Mohamed Salah, no Trent Alexander-Arnold in the squad, no Dominic Szoboszlai in the squad, no Alexis McAllister in the squad, a lot of crucial players not playing for Liverpool. Chelsea go in with, yes, an undermanned squad, a couple of players who didn't play that potentially would have, but still a squad that arguably on paper is better than Liverpool's team, especially early on in the game when Ryan Gravenberch goes down with an injury and they bring on Connor Bradley and play, you know, they bring on, who they bring on? They bring on Joe Gomez and they move Connor Bradley up to the wing, and it was an extremely depleted, undermanned, youthful Liverpool side. Chelsea probably, whilst being still very youthful, of course, with the likes of Enzo and Caicedo and Palmer and Jackson and Gusto and Di Sassi and Colwill and a lot of youthful exuberance, probably a little bit more experience, a little bit more Premier League experience, especially towards the latter stages of the game. But the game kicks off, a lot of iffy kind of moments from either side. Chelsea put the ball in the net. It was ruled out for offside, very controversially. I'm still not convinced that it was totally offside, but that kind of moment got overshadowed by something I'm going to mention very, very soon. First half comes and goes. Chelsea put the ball in the net, but Liverpool have chances. I think Liverpool might have hit the post at some stage, hit the bar. But it was a very end-to-end entertaining game. And look, the last three games that the last two cup finals Liverpool-Chelsea have played, both went to extra time, both ended 0-0. Or both went to penalties, both ended 0-0. And it was kind of destined for a very similar result. Liverpool and Chelsea just love to play 0-0 draws. It's bizarre. Second half comes. The disallowed goal happens. I will revisit that, don't you worry. The Liverpool disallowed goal happens. A lot of different chances for Chelsea where you probably think that they could have and arguably should have scored. Conor Gallagher hits the post. Kind of in an effort that probably should have scored. He should have scored another effort 1-on-1, which was saved by Kelleher. And like to put it in this way, Chelsea probably had the best, like had the lion's share of the chances throughout the game. I would say had the lion's share of the chances throughout the game. I think obviously Chelsea probably in the first 90 minutes or in regular time probably did dominate the game. In my opinion. In Liverpool, yeah, probably had more possession, probably had more shots, but when you look at the quality of chances and we look at actual goal-scoring opportunities, both teams put the ball in the net, so you that kind of rule, or that rules each other out there. And I think Chelsea just had a little bit more, more clear-cut chances. Liverpool got through to extra time, and they were probably the better team in extra time. They were, felt like they were first every ball, they felt like they were just ready to be there every time they needed to be. It was a very youthful team. And then, of course, with 3 minutes to go till the end of extra time, corner delivered, Van Dijk flicks on the near post, past Petrovic, goal, game done. Liverpool, Carabao Cup champions. Congratulations, of course. I'm not bitter still at all. I've had approximately like 4 hours sleep since that game has kicked off. I'm still very raw. That's the game. Let's backtrack and speak about the moments. Chelsea's offside goal. Now, I flagged it early, like as the ball was played, I go, oh, this is touch and go. I didn't celebrate the goal because I thought it could be ruled out, and it was ruled out. So thanks, VAR, for doing that. Appreciate it. Although, in fairness, the linesman did give it offside, so I guess it's not VAR's fault. Marginal. I think it's on. I've still yet to see an angle which definitively tells me it's offside, because the lines can be manipulated, the lines can be drawn wrong, and look, it's just one of those things. I, in my opinion, I'm still iffy on that, but it's offside. It was given offside. Let's speak about the Van Dijk incident. So, I'm not going to explain it because everyone who's watching this has definitely seen it. In my, like, honestly, in my honest opinion, and I'm saying this without the Chelsea bias lens, right? And you can tell. I say this, and you can choose to believe me or not, right? You can choose to believe me or not. But I promise you, I'm not saying this. Like, you can choose to believe me or not, but I promise you, I'm saying this through a purely neutral lens and not a Chelsea lens at all. Virgil van Dijk runs forward and is being marked by the Chelsea defender. Wartur Endo is in an offside position when the ball is played and directly impacts the run of the man that is marking the goal scorer. In my opinion, that is impacting the play in the same way that if you remove the set piece element from that perspective, if Wartura Endo was standing in an offside position and a through ball is played and Levi Colwill runs into Wartura Endo whilst he's in an offside position when the ball was played and Levi Colwill's man runs onto the ball and scores, that would be given offside. I think the same principles apply to this situation, genuinely, because he affects the play. He directly affects the play. Now, can you say that Van Dijk still would have scored if Colwill was there or the defender was there? I can't remember exactly who it was. We don't know that. But he affects the play. And is it touch and go? Yes. Is it clear cut? No. Would I have ruled that out? No. I wouldn't have ruled that out because I don't think that is an error worth ruling a goal out for. But if that was given offside initially, I also wouldn't have overturned it, if that makes sense. It's one of those very, very touch-and-go ones. It's one of those very, very iffy. You can give it, you can't. It's one of those ones, in my opinion. And I saw it on the replay, and I go, the reason why obviously he went to the screen was because it was a subjective. It's a subjective offside. Did the play impact the play? Yes, he did. The player was directly impacted. Levi Colwill, I'm pretty sure it was Levi Colwill, was directly impacted by a player that was in an offside position, and Levi Colwill not being there directly impacted the goal or the potential outcome of the goal. Like I said, it's one of the more bizarre decisions ever made, and I would not have overturned it. Trust me, I wouldn't have overturned it, but I also can understand why the referee or why the VAR was like, this could be offside. I wouldn't have overturned it, but I can understand why someone would have because of the reasons I stated. And also, like I said, if that was given offside initially, then it's one of those things. That happened. Gallagher has chances after that. That happens. Liverpool were that was probably Liverpool's biggest and best chance of the game, probably. And then Chelsea dominate for the rest of the 90 minutes, I reckon. And yeah, the Gallagher chance hit the post, which was touch and go. And then the Gallagher 1-on-1, which you simply must score that. Like, there is no excuse. No excuse whatsoever. Yeah, it's good keeping. Yeah, good. Okay, fine. It's good keeping. You score that. You have to. Like, there is no kind of realm of existence in which you're justifiably not, like, where it's justified that you don't score that. It's fucked. Like, really. And I don't like swearing. Oh, that's a lie, dude. But anyways, that happens, and then obviously the game happens as it happens. Thoughts on the game? Look, Liverpool, congrats. They deserved it. On the whole, probably, I think extra time, they were definitely the better team. They went for it. They were far more energetic. Going for it. Full credit to them. Chelsea, this is probably going to be the bulk of the discussion this episode. Let's speak about Chelsea. Let's speak about Mauricio Pochettino in particular. Mauricio Pochettino is Chelsea career is on a knife's edge, right? It's on a knife's edge. And not necessarily because of the results themselves, because look, if you had said to us pre if you had said to us pre-game that if you had said to us pre-game that Liverpool would win the game 1-0 in extra time, okay, fair enough, it happens, Liverpool are good, right? However, and I also think and I also think Mauricio Pochettino, he did not miss those chances, right? He did not miss that 1-on-1. Gallagher did. He did not miss that open goal Cole Palmer did, right? That was in the first half. So I'm not going to sit here and blame him for the missed chances. I'm going to see all the, what I am going to do is I'm going to sit here and blame him for his decisions. I don't know why. Like, I don't know why the move Gusto moved to left back, and they brought Chalobah on and moved him to right back when you got Colwill, who yeah was playing very well at centre half, but he's also can play left back. So just keep the shape, keep as natural of a shape as possible. Keep your two cent like keep your like just keep it there. Like I don't know, like just be natural in the replacements. Chalobah is a far better centre back than Colwill. Chalobah is a far better centre back than Gusto is a left back, and also Colwill is a very competent left back. So just put Chalobah centre half, Colwill out to the left, and keep Gusto where he was because I thought Gusto was fine. Like barring the touches, I thought defensively Gusto was great. I thought defensively Malo Gusto was great. Offensively, some of the touches obviously was probably a little bit of a subplot to the game, which is a bit fucked. And I thought offensively was a little bit, but on a whole, it was fine. I thought the midfield was. I actually thought Moises Caicedo played an excellent game. I actually thought Moises Caicedo played an excellent game. I thought he was very, very good defensively. Very good defensively. Very good at shutting out those like putting out fires. And that's kind of what we need him to do because Enzo's that ball player in that midfield, and Caicedo can just drop around and put out those fires. Put out those fires and play the simple ball. Put out those fires, play the simple ball. So I thought he was fine. Enzo I thought was fine. Gallagher I thought for the whole was fine, but didn't. Obviously, the chances. Sterling was rubbish. That's why he got subbed off. I think it was fine. Jackson was good. Palmer was fine as well. I thought the subs. I thought Nonny was our most kind of impactful sub. I thought Mudryk had some chances, but didn't really do anything with them. Yeah, I and Nkunku I thought was good as well when he came on. The approach to that extra time was something that I have anger with because he's come out and said that they were essentially playing for pens. The team were essentially playing for pens. He's come out and basically openly admitted that. And that is such a cowardice and loser mentality thing to do. And look, I was gonna tweet this, but I refrained and I ended up tweeting something which I thought was far funnier. And I think this kind of not sums up a lot, but kind of really shows like what Mauricio Pochettino is, right? And that is when life gives you losers, don't be surprised when you lose. And Mauricio Pochettino has shown for whatever his qualities are as a manager, what he did with Spurs, the good that he did with PSG, and the whatever good he's done at Chelsea so far. It is clear that there is something ingrained with him in which he is destined to fail. I don't know what the fix is to that, whether or not he can fix that, or whether or not as a football kind of media and landscape, we are looking into that too much. But he failed to win anything at Spurs, which was in hindsight criminal with how good that team was in comparison to the rest of the league at that time. He didn't win what he did with PSG was underwhelming. And what he's done so far at Chelsea, when Liverpool were there for the taking, they were there for the taking. They were tired, they were young, they were backs against the wall, and he set up in a cowardice way. He set up in a way that he thought that they were going to lose, that Chelsea were going to lose. And that is that loser mentality. It's unacceptable. right? And considering Chelsea have lost their last six domestic cup finals, all in hilariously different circumstances. The City Carabao Cup final on pens was hilarious. The Arsenal FA Cup final during COVID was funny. The Leicester FA Cup final the year after that was even more hilarious with the way that we lost that. And then the three Liverpool Cup finals in a row, two on pens and one in the 117th minute. There has been something ingrained in this club on a domestic scale, and you need a winner to fix that. A person who just has this innate ability to get the job done. And Mauricio Pochettino, for all good, that is the one thing. That is the one thing that you can level at him and say that you are not that. You are not a winner. You might be a great tactician. You might be a great motivator. You might be really good with youth players. But right now, and for your career, you have not been a winner. And that's just cold, hard fact of life, right? Cold, hard fact of life. And that's fine because he's not a bad manager. He's not a bad manager, right? If we look at what he's done, if we look at his honours as a manager, he won three trophies at PSG. So he won the league once, the Coupe de France, and the Trophy of the Champions. And that's it. Nothing at Southampton, nothing at Espanyol, was it? Yeah, nothing at Espanyol, nothing at Southampton, nothing at Tottenham. And I'd be shocked if he gets anything at Chelsea. And Chelsea, for like the longest time, maybe not the longest time, but for whenever I've been alive, I've always gone into cup finals confident, right? Maybe the League Cup final loss to Liverpool the last time probably put the first doubt in my mind, because when you look at the kind of history of it, Chelsea, from the seventh cup final ago, which I think, if my memory serves, was the 2018 FA Cup final against United, we were rubbish that year. We were awful, and we still won that trophy, right? And ever so the year later, we were rubbish, and we still won the Europa League. So Chelsea, in my lifetime, especially when I've been really cognizant about football, have always been a team that is good in finals, and I've always been a team that are winners, right? Obviously, the City Carabao Cup final loss was heartbreaking, but that happens. The Arsenal one, it happens. The Leicester one probably put the first slither of doubt in my mind and goes, how can't we win this? And then ever since our Liverpool Carabao Cup the first time, so two finals ago, that put the doubt. The FA Cup solidified it, and this one as well. There is something wrong on a domestic scale with this club. Maybe it's Wembley. Maybe we just can't play Wembley. There's a curse. But I mean, in the meantime, like European Cup finals-wise, we've won three out of our last four European Cup finals. Europa League, lost the Super Cup, won the Champions League, won the Super Cup. Continentally, great. Domestically, not. And whether or not that's just a coincidence, I don't know. But to fix that, you need winners. And when you have a young team that hasn't won anything, right? Like, what, Cole Palmer's not won anything. He hasn't. Like, if being honest, if you go front to back, the starting lineup, Petrovic, nothing at that scale. Chilwell, okay, fair enough, he's won things. Gusto De Sarsi Coil, nothing. Enzo, okay, he's won a World Cup, great. Caicedo, nothing. Jackson, nothing. Gallagher, nothing. Of note. Palmer, nothing of note. And okay, Sterling has won things, but he was dreadful and got subbed off. And we brought on, was it Nonny? Did we bring on for Sterling? No, Nkunku. Okay, Nkunku probably hasn't won a hell of a lot, if anything, of note really. It's just really like, at what stage does it flip? At what stage does it turn? Because it doesn't look like it's going to turn anytime soon, right? Like, mentally checked out of the season. Mentally checked out. Because, like, mentally checked out of the season, right? Because what's there to play for now? Really? What is there to play for now? Okay, we've got Leeds in the cup. If we go deep in the cup, great. Great. With the lead game's what, a third round, fifth round. Okay, great. So like we're still relatively there in terms of the cup competitions. Liverpool, United, City, and Newcastle are probably going to be the biggest threats in that competition. I don't see us beating any of them. Maybe Newcastle we can probably beat. United, God, I don't know. City, forget about it. In a cup final, forget about it. The league, we're 11th. We're 11th. 11th place. Like, we're 11th place. We're 13th. We're 12 points off 5th. We are 23 points off 3rd. We are 23 points off 3rd. Like, what are we doing here, really? It's just a shrug at the shoulders. It is just an utter shrug at the shoulders, because what is the point? Like, what is the point? When... And I'm not going to... I haven't mentioned the price tag at all throughout this, because price tags do not exist in football, right? And this is something I actually want to speak about. Gary Neville's blue billion-pound bottle jobs or whatever it was. It's a good line, fair enough. Pair de Jury 100% wrote that to him and just slid it across 100%, because Gary Neville's not smart enough to think of that. Good line, great. But who cares how much they're worth? It's not your money, is it? When Chelsea spent $125 million on Moises Caicedo, it doesn't come out of my bank account. It doesn't come off my fucking debit card, does it? No, it doesn't come off yours either. So who cares how much they spend? As long as they don't liquidate themselves. And let's be honest, I don't think Chelsea are ever going to be in a position where they're going to liquidate themselves. Chelsea's owner Chelsea could not function as a club for 3 months and they survived. Like, I think it's fine. So, I'm not subscribing to the, oh, your squad's worth £1 billion, blah, blah, blah. Football, doesn't exist in football. Money is purely a sequence of symbols to determine a trade. That's all it is. It doesn't exist. So, yeah, that's probably why I haven't really spoken about the price tags at all of any of the players. But, yeah. Poch, like, I wouldn't sack him right now, but if things don't change, we're probably going to get into a position where it's like, okay, realistically, what are we actually doing here? What are we doing? Because, okay, it's a project. I agree, it's a project. Young squad, really young squad. We actually had a younger starting 11 on our average age in Liverpool. We didn't have one player over 30, I don't think. I don't know how old Chilwell is. I don't think he's 30. We didn't have one player. Like, who was our oldest player? Chilwell's probably our oldest player on the pitch, and he's not old. Like, he's 27, I think. Extremely young defence, barring that. Extremely, extremely young double pivot. And a front line. Sterling. I forget. So Sterling's the oldest statesman of the squad. I don't know what needs to change. Something does need to change, because it's going to become drastically shit very quickly, if not already. Because the season's done. So what's the point? Really? What is the point? Anyways, that's just my 2 cents on Poch and Chelsea and all that shit. I can't be bothered anymore. I'm going to take a quick water break. Take a break, have a Kit Kat. And they'll return. I'll touch on a little bit of Prem, and then I'll speak on Melbourne Victory, because that's another team who's giving me the shits. All my sporting teams just love to piss me off. It's great. It's awesome. Okay, we're back. It's brief Premier League action. Of course, the League Cup dominated the discourse, but the Premier League still did happen. Arsenal win 4-1, pretty convincingly over Newcastle, which was a surprising result, because I thought Newcastle would still be like handy and like still probably put up a fight, but Arsenal. Maybe a little bit underrated. I spoke about it a lot. I spoke about it not long ago, about how like they're underrated, which is pretty interesting. Fulham with a 2-1 win over United in the last minute, which was pretty funny watching that. Very, very funny watching that. It was an Alex Iwobi goal with a couple of seconds to play, which was great for a neutral. Very, very funny. What else? is there nothing else? I don't think in terms of Premier League action. So there you go. So yeah, let's fly down to Australia and let's speak about Melbourne Victory. So, this is the third non. Oh yeah, so the actual Western United game happened as well. The Western United game against the Victory Western United game was probably one of the weirdest and most annoying but also happiest I've ever been watching a game. I didn't go to it. I thought I was going to, but I got home late from work and I couldn't be bothered. So I watched it from home. The second home game at that stage I had watched away, like not at the ground. The first home game I had watched away from the ground was the MacArthur one where we lost. The MacArthur one in which we lost. So I went there with, I watched the game with tepid expectations, and when we went 1-0 down, I was like, oh yeah, I've seen this story before, great. Obviously, the silver with the two goals, delirium. And I thought, great, this is going to be the kick-on for the season that we needed, we're going to bounce back, it's going to be awesome. And then we rock up to Amy Park on a Saturday afternoon, on a Sunday afternoon, and absolutely shit the bed. We lose 1-0 to Central Coast, three red cards, an own goal from Ryan Teague. Horrendous performance. Horrendous. Nothing. No chance creations. Nothing. And I don't think it's the players' fault, because I think the players, like, and I said this last week, and the players are quite clearly extremely talented. And this, I said this last week, player for player, this is probably one of the more talented Victory teams I've ever seen, right? Bruno speaks for himself. Zizou speaks for himself. Arzani, unreal. Nish, when he's on, superb. Falami came on and made a massive impact, and we've seen how good he is. Ryan Teague, so good. Brimmer, elite. Monj is showing signs after having a relatively slow start to the season. He's showing signs of being a pretty good player, right? And even our defense has been relatively solid this season. So player for player, one of the stronger Victory teams I've ever watched. But the lack of, it seems like we're doing everything right. Keeping possession, retaining the ball, recycling the play, using patterns of play to progress the ball up into the final third. Great. As soon as we get to the final third, it feels like the players are trying to do everything in their power to not try and make something happen. Like, it's very bizarre. And there has to be an instruction. Because I think when shit like when Arzani and Machacha and Zizou have these interplays, and like Teague joins in, and they just destroy teams by themselves because they're that good. I think that is a player driven initiative type thing. I don't think that's Popper going, all right, this is a pattern of play that we're practicing. There is a lot of concern right now because I feel like we are still very good, but we're also very bad at the same time. And I guess I'm kind of contradicting myself in a sense, because I spoke about why I thought Chelsea dominated the game in the League Cup final despite Liverpool having the lion's share of chances in possession. And that's because the quality of chances that Chelsea had were far better. And so hence why I think we dominated. So I don't think I can sit here and say that Victory are dominating games and Victory are performing very well when we aren't getting any clear-cut chances, and the goals that we are scoring are coming from individual brilliance that are like in moments of individual brilliance that don't seem like they're sustainable, right? This has to be, like, they need to shape up quickly, because we're not getting towards the business end of the season, but look, we're going to make finals, so that's fine. We probably should make top four, so we should get a home final. Top two would be great. I still think we're better than Wellington. I still think we're better on a whole than Central Coast. I still think we're better on a whole than MacArthur. It's just about being able to put it together. And I think that's the story. That's going to be the story of the season. I think we're at a big risk of one of the most talented player-for-player Victory sides that has ever been at the club being wasted in a season that, realistically, Victory are, like, if you're talking overall, a victory better than Central Coast, probably, if not on par, a Victory better than Wellington, I would say so. A victory better than MacArthur? I would say so. But it's then just not putting it together. It seems like it is so dysfunctional. It seems like they aren't able to put all the pieces together, even though they put some pieces together at different times and then other sides of the pieces aren't together. Like, when we are free-flowing and when we are scoring four goals in a game, we're conceding three. But when we are very, very tight defensively and we're keeping clean sheets, we can't score. It seems like we can only do one thing instead of both. And I feel like the lack of connection between the form of the defense and the form of the attack is really letting this team down. And I don't think that's a personnel issue, because I think the personnel's there, as we've seen this season. I think it's purely a coaching and a tactics thing. And that is down to Popper to fix it, because he's been one of the more heavily scrutinized coaches that the A-League has seen because of his ability to get so, so close and then fall at the last hurdle. This is probably the most talented team he's had. And if he can't get there with this team and with everything going around, like the atmosphere at the club, the fact that we're getting like five figures every single week, no dramas, if he can't do it this year, I don't think he's ever going to be able to do it, in all honesty. Because like, it's getting to the point where it's like, come on. You have to be able to do it now. You have to. It's just one of those things. Yeah, that is all for Popper and victory chat, because that's going to give me the shits if I speak about it for too long. Yeah, what else A-League happened over the weekend? Western Sydney beat Adelaide. Adelaide dropped to like last. They're 10th, but they're teetering big time. Newcastle, of course, due to MacArthur. West Sydney and Melbourne City played a 1-1 draw. Marcatillo scored a really good goal, so good on him. That was a great finish. And Brisbane drew to Western United. 2-0, Markovsky with the last-minute goal, which is great. So, yeah, that is all, I think, for today's episode. What other football is happening? Is there Prem? Oh, yeah, obviously the Tillies. The Tillies win 3-0. Good. They're going to play on Wednesday, and it should be a procession against Uzbekistan. Good on them. Yeah, good. Michelle Heyman back in the squad, scoring. Awesome. Fowler, Ford, 2 goals, last 10 minutes. Seals the game. Awesome stuff. Lovely, lovely, lovely. Just come to Marvel, do the job, do the business. No dramas, no stress, for God's sake. Yes, good. FA Cup midweek, which will be great, I'm sure. And then, yeah, Manchester Derby happening next Monday, which I'm sure will definitely be a topic of discussion. So there you go. That is all for today's episode. Thank you all very much for watching another episode of the Two Footer Tackle Podcast. Make sure you subscribe. As always, make sure you subscribe. As always, it would mean more than the word of giving us support. Thank you all for sticking around. As always, if this is your first time, make sure you subscribe. If this is your 100th time, make sure you tune in next week, as you always do. But yes, stay well, stay safe. See you guys next time, and goodbye.